Hey, welcome back, everybody, to Cultivating Change with Martin Mayorga. I am flying solo today. Nikki's in Costa Rica. Can't say I blame him. I'm in Miami right now and heading to Maryland for a couple days and then back to Costa Rica. Today I'm going to be talking about, and it's just going to be me today, and I'll be talking about the coffee market. And that has been a big issue and a big topic that has been discussed, not only in the industry, but also now on a broader scale. I've seen an article in the Wall Street Journal recently, and a lot of people are talking about, you know, the coffee market's at a 13-year low, and what are we going to do, And I figured I'd talk about it, and just so everybody knows, in this podcast, and really all my communication that I put out there, this is not for the industry. I don't really speak into the industry. I figure what I need to do, what my vision is to empower consumers through education and also to help them recognize that their money can go to a very good place and to a very good supply chain that is positive and does good, and they can actually get quality value for that. I'm in this to try to make a big impact. If you're on board, let's do it together. Competitor or not competitor, it doesn't matter to me. And consumers, yeah, there's billions of dollars out there that we all spend, and I think we can do better. And it's not your fault. It's the industry's fault, and it's really a lot of really ingrained habits and supply chain inefficiencies that cause our money to not be allocated well. So one of the things that I think we need to talk about when we talk about the coffee market is a little bit of the history. The truth is, coffee originated in Africa, and coffee made its way over to different parts of the world, from Indonesia over to Latin America, through the slave trade and colonization. And that's the number one historical truth that I think we don't talk about, and people almost cringe at when we think about it in the industry. But the truth is, it's the truth. And I believe that if you don't deal with the truth and at least acknowledge it, you really can't make an impact on anything. So we have to recognize that. You know, it's part of the ugly reality of history. And the sad part, in my opinion, is that a lot of it still exists, especially the fact that it was developed in colonization. You have these massive coffee mills throughout. I'll speak mostly about Latin America, by the way, because that's where we spend pretty much all our time. Eduardo's actually in Indonesia right now, but it's not our strength and wheelhouse. We don't even speak the language. So my focus will be talking about Latin America. In Latin America, you have mills, massive mills, who aggregate coffee as cheaply as they can, as efficiently as they can, to export it out. And in history, during colonization, during the 1800s, 1800s, it was to Europe. And now it's a lot to the U.S. as well. And the sad truth is that a lot of what was established 300 so years ago is still there. And I'll get into that a little bit. So coffee became a recognized massive commodity, and like I said, in the 1800s or so, to the point where the coffee exchange, the New York Coffee Exchange, was established in the 1880s. This was basically to trade coffee. And back in the old days, where you had to really manage supply and demand, that was relevant, right? Managing how much coffee there was in the world and understanding availability of coffee versus demand of coffee was relevant because of basic economic principles of supply and demand, right? Low supply, high price. High supply, low price. Pretty standard, you know, econ 101 stuff. As we all know, the world's developed since then. The markets now have evolved and developed and become more sophisticated. You have a coffee trade, which is, you know, coffee is the number two traded commodity in the world. There is definitely supply and demand aspect to it, but there's also, we have to recognize that it's a market that people make money in. There are massive investors and funds that invest into the market, creating extra noise that we don't really need in the industry, but it happens. There's money that fluctuates in and out of the market and impacts the market by speculators. So that's an important thing to also keep out there and to be aware of, that This is not simply supply and demand. Yes, there's a very strong supply and demand impact right now, in my opinion, because to summarize my opinion of things right now, we have a lot of coffee. We have a lot of coffee out there. And it's a bad thing right now. I think there's a lot of pain that we're feeling because of it for producers. The market, last I checked, was about 93 cents a pound. And it's also not a bad thing. And that's something we have to recognize. From what I basically have assessed, what's happening is Brazil has become a monster at incredibly efficient farming. They've established massive, massive farms. They've mechanized. They've worked with strains that are much more productive and efficient and growing. And they've gotten the cost of production very, very cheap. So they've been able to put a lot of coffee out there. So I think we have to recognize that. And we have to also look at the reality of, for commercial coffee, that's not a bad thing. By the way, I'm drinking my coffee and I drink a pot every morning. So you're going to hear a lot of pouring and sipping. It's Perla Negra, by the way, from Costa Rica, from my friends at Las Lajas. Really freaking good. Where was I? So there's a lot of coffee, there's a lot of technification, there's a lot of evolution, which is good. And I think we have to be aware of that and not really, you know, I think we tend to overreact and we tend to have pendulum swings of reaction in the industry. And I'd be one to say, look, this is good. It's good that they're getting commercial coffee, and we have to differentiate between the types of coffees that are out there before we have these conversations. But commercial coffee is being grown more efficiently, so the everyday low-end crap that I wouldn't touch and unfortunately is the massive, at least in the U.S. Market dominating coffee, is being grown more efficiently. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. I think it's a good thing for consumers. What we have to be aware of is that there are different qualities of coffee. And there are different types of coffee. And we can't allow the fact that our commercial coffee in Brazil is being grown so efficiently and cheaply. We can't let that become a race to the bottom, if you will. We can't let that become an issue where now every producer has to figure out how to compete with that, because not every producer is growing commercial mass volume coffee that's sun grown and machine picked. So I think we're going to talk about quality a little bit. Let's talk a little bit first about how the coffee market works, because I get asked this a lot, even by people in the industry. And this is what's shocking to me, is the lack of education by folks in the industry, which I think is unexcusable. I started this company 22 years ago, really with the exact purpose of trying to fight this kind of crap, you know, which is to help producers who really are focused on quality and the environment and true sustainability stand out through direct market access and high quality product. And I think we first need to all recognize that there's different qualities of coffee. There's mass produced commercial coffee. The next step would be let's talk cupping score. So, you know, in the Specialty Coffee Association, any coffee with a cupping score of 80 or higher specialty grade. So under, you know, 79 under is going to be commercial coffee. Anything over 80 is a specialty grade. My perspective was, when I started my business in 1995, essentially, when I started trading coffee into the U.S., was to focus kind of on, you know, where is the volume of specialty grade coffee? And it's typically in the 82, 83 cupping range. So we focus on the really 83, 84. We have some 85, 8, we have a 90. I mean, the Perla Negra I'm drinking is like a 90, 91. But the volume of specialties in the 82 to 84 range, we're in the 83 to 84 range. Because that's where we felt we could really make the most impact on volume. And I think in a commodity traded product, if you want to make an impact, you have to look at volume. So specialty is 80 plus. We're focusing on 83 or so. And the big movement now has been to go to what I call top specialty and what these small guys just call specialty. They've basically taken the specialty term over and believe that specialty has to be, from what I gather, 85 plus. I think we have to break the market up. I think we have to let commercial be commercial, let Brazil be efficient, let them make money, because they make money. These guys that own the states, these families that own the states, make plenty of money. I think that we then need to talk about a specialty segment in which we have different expectations of quality, therefore we have different expectations of price. And the 82 to 84 range should be, you know, your specialty. And then there should be kind of the top specialty, which is more boutique-y stuff. It's the micro lots. It's the honey mill coffee. It's the natural processed coffees, etc. Within that, we also have to talk about that organic does have a premium. There's some slightly higher costs. They shouldn't be related to output because I could rant on about this, but organic doesn't necessarily mean lower yields. But there's different costs. I mean, there's a lot more management of the farm. There's more management of data. There's certification. There's traceability. There's a lot more important things that do have a little bit of a cost, but really shouldn't be that significant. So we've broken up the kind of broad categories of quality. I think within that, we also have to recognize that we also have different qualities and different types of farmers. Everybody talks about, you know, we're supporting this farmer, we're doing this. And I even see it in the industry. People talk about, you know, I'm helping this farmer in this country. And I know the farmer because I just know people in the industry. And I'm like, wow, this is one of the wealthiest families in the country. And this company acts like they're saving a farmer because these people do own a coffee farm, but it doesn't mean that they're poor farmers. So let's break down, from my perspective, the farms. You have what I would consider just estates. Brazil has a lot of estates. There are some countries that just have bigger masses of land. And typically, one of the wealthy families or multinational trader owns that land and that property. Those are estate coffees. It's not a good term, in my opinion. You know, I don't know much about wine, but when I hear about estate wine, it sounds good and fancy, but in my opinion, a coffee farm that's an estate is basically just, you know, a industrialized or just a large output farm. And in my opinion, in the smaller countries, is part of the colonization impact of coffee. So you have the big estates. They put out a lot of volume. They typically have their own mill, very savvy, very good at, you know, have their financing together, typically actually buy coffee from the community and aggregate it into their mill and, you know, just volume and, you know, financially sound. You then have wealthy families and wealthy farmers. Latin America tends to have its wealth concentrated typically in anywhere from 4 to 12 families. And those families tend to own coffee farms, tend to own coffee mills, tend to own export companies. They're quote-unquote farmers as well in the industry. And, you know, I think they tend to not need the support that some of the smaller farmers need. You then seen recently, I would say in the last 10 years, again, talking about Latin America, talking about my experience, what I call expat farmers. Typically somebody whose mom and dad or family grew up in Latin America, they're American kids and they have money and they become farmers and they buy land and they kind of do the boutique thing. And they have pretty farms, they do really nice quality coffee. They are quote-unquote farmers, but they're more investors and they don't have an issue with market access. They don't have an issue with financing. They don't have an issue with access to quality agronomy and having access to the market data, if you will, of what roasters are doing. Now we go to the category where we focus, which is the small local farmers. And these small local farmers are typically the ones that are left over from the colonization era. They're the ones that are still selling to multinationals because they don't have any other choice or they don't know any different. They've been selling to the same multinational for three generations. They feel like that multinational has helped them because the multinational loaned them money, sold them fertilizer, bought their coffee, but don't recognize because they didn't have access to the data that they're pretty much getting screwed over for generations. Those are the ones that we want to support. Those are the farmers that I've focused on supporting since day one, which is why our policy at Mayorga is we only work with producers who live on their farm and work on their farm, or cooperatives made up of those individuals. Those are the farmers that are struggling. So I think that's something to recognize. As we talk about who, you know, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? Who needs the help? The Brazilian estate owners don't need our help. The wealthy families in Latin America don't need our help. It's these small, marginalized farmers that have been excluded from the market purposely that really need to be brought into the fold, and that we need to recognize will be very much hurt by this market swing. So we've identified the farmers, we've identified the coffee qualities. Let's talk about what's going on right now. I'm sorry, the market is about 93 cents or so a pound. From my knowledge and experience, the cost of production of organic coffee in Latin America is on the low end $1.27 a pound, on the high end $1.50 a pound. Anything higher than that, producers need to look internally and say, what are we doing wrong? What can we do better? Our cost of production is too high. So that's really the gap right now. So let's understand how coffee moves. Typically, small farmer, and I'm going to now switch to talking about the small types of farmers we work with. The farmer, historically, I mean, if we go back in time, the farmer couldn't even get their coffee to a mill. So they had coyotes, which are basically middlemen of middlemen, go out in a pickup truck with cash and be like, hey, I'll buy your coffee, I'll buy your coffee, I'll buy your coffee. They load up their truck, they go to a mill and say, hey, I'll sell you this coffee. And that's how farmers went to market, quote unquote. Now it's a little bit more sophisticated, where at least the farmer has access to the mill and has had access to the mill for a while now. And unfortunately, the mill is owned by multinational traders and has historically been part of the issue, right? The mill buys at a low market from the farmer. They keep them from accessing the market in the United States. They pay them low. They overcharge them for milling fees. They overcharge them for fertilizer. They'll tell them that nobody's buying organic, and they'll not pay them a premium for organic, and then they'll sell the coffees organic. All kinds of things. Anyway, the mill is typically the exporter. That exporter then brings it into the U.S. through an importer, and then it gets brokered into the trade to roasters. So there's a lot of meat in the middle of the supply chain, and that is the age-old cutting out the middleman is an important thing to discuss. But I think another thing to discuss is the habits that were established over 300 years, where people with money came into these countries and took advantage of small farmers. Those need to be broken. So I'm going to talk a little bit about the things I've seen. I talked a little bit about it already, which is historically a mill or an exporter will say to a farmer, you need money for your harvest, you have no money, banks won't lend to you, but we will, because we want to buy your coffee. And we're going to buy your coffee, we'll buy all your coffee, and we'll loan you the money you need. That sounds great, right? Well, here's what typically happens. They'll loan the money, and I've seen interest rates as high as 27% annualized. 27% interest. And they'll say, and we'll buy your coffee at, you know, market minus 10. And it's typically, it'll be a nice coffee, and it'll be an 83 cup, it'll be an 82 cup, because they can mill it to that level. So what these mills are doing is, off the bat, they're making money on interest, they're paying producers less than market, and so they're making money off the interest rate, and then they're going to turn that coffee around and sell it at a major premium and make the bulk of the profit. Well, that's been happening so long that these producers are in never-ending poverty. We literally have in the coffee industry a nonprofit called Food for Farmers, which is a great, great nonprofit. But it's, in my opinion, embarrassing that our industry needs to even have that. And that's why that exists, because these habits have kept producers in debt and impoverished for generations. And that's all they've known. I mean, I literally, in Nicaragua, I had a group I was working with, and one of the first things we do is we look at the whole supply chain, and I said, okay, who's your mill, who's your exporter? And then when I heard the names, I said, okay, well, we're going to change that, because these guys are not the people we want to work with. They really dug their heels and said, no, they've helped us for generations. They helped our grandfather, blah, blah, blah. And I had to sit down and say, okay, define help. Well, they bought our coffee. They loaned us money. And it was the same thing. These were the people that were paying 27% interest. These were the people who were getting, you know, level market or negative differentials for their coffee and had great coffee, had beautiful coffee, but had been so indebted by this relationship, yet they thought it was this massive favor. It's a mindset that I think took hundreds of years to develop and will take hopefully less to break apart. So that happens. I've seen mills that tell producers that if they want to sell to them, they have to buy their fertilizer. So these mills are in the fertilizer business, and you look at the prices, and the fertilizer will be 3 to 5 times the market cost. I've seen, like I said earlier, mills say, look, you know what? Nobody's buying organic. Nobody's paying premiums, and you know they keep them out of the market, so they make up stories to pay them less. And then, producer has to sell the coffee. Even more than that, and it goes up into the supply chain to the roaster side. Maybe not the roaster side, but the trader side. More than a handful of times, I've personally been involved in situations where friends I have in the business will have sold a coffee that's been agreed upon, that's been cupped, pre-shipment sample, everything's good. It arrives here in the States. They get an email or phone call saying, you know what, the coffee cupped an 82 instead of an 83, and we're going to have to reject it, and you have two options. We're going to ship it back to you, or we're going to have to renegotiate, and the price we agreed upon is no longer valid, and we'll pay you 30, 40, 50 cents less per pound. Typically, that happens when these traders fix their coffee on the futures market, and then the market goes down. And they want to remain competitive, so they find little sneaky ways to do this. I've been involved to the point where a friend of mine shipped 4 containers of coffee to a trader, had this happen to him. I was actually having lunch with him when he got that call. He was stressed, and I said, look, what are you going to do? What options do you have? He said, I don't have options. I either take the coffee back, or I take a huge hit. Either way, I take a huge hit. I'd rather just take the financial hit that's definable than have all this coffee I don't know what to do with. And I was like, well, that's crazy. How many times have these people done this to you? He said, in the last 8 years of doing business with them, they've done it to me about 4 to 5 times. And it's always when the market drops. So I said, all right, we're going to teach these guys a lesson. Tell me about this coffee. Give me a sample, blah, blah, blah. It was a nice coffee. It was an 83 cup. We scored it. We even actually sent it out to a lab for scoring. These other people were claiming it cupped at an 81.5. And I said, send them an email and say, send all the coffee to Mayorga. Give them my name. Give them my address. And tell them to ship the containers to my facility. And don't give them any other information. Just tell them, okay, we'll take the coffee. Just send it to Mayorga. Because it's very important for a lot of these traders that are used to the bad habits to recognize the world is changing. The market is changing. And their reality is changing. And if they don't change with it and if they keep doing the same things and operating under the same bad habits, they're going to be out of the market very soon. And that's what I'm trying to do, right? Create that opportunity for producers, for good quality mills to work in a healthy market. So that's just an example, and I think I kind of ranted off a little bit about that. But that's really part of what we do, and I guess I should really talk about what Mayorga does. Whether it's a good market, a bad market, my opinion is knowledge and relationships are everything. If you don't know what's going on in these communities, if you don't know what's going on in the world of a coffee farmer, there's no way you're going to do anything about it. So all these, you know, Instagrammers that are out there and they happen to be in the coffee business because maybe their mom and dad give them a few $1,000 and they bought a roaster, talking about direct trade and they're talking about saving the world. Dude, if you're not down there, if you're not, and I'm not saying go down there and take a few pictures once a year. I'm saying get in there and understand and ask the questions and learn finance, learn trade, learn the commodities world, learn futures, learn the culture. Understand it. Because if you don't understand it, you can't change it. That's just a bottom line fact of anything in life. And we do that. I was born in Guatemala. I was raised in Nicaragua. I lived in Costa Rica. I lived in Peru. It's my culture, so it's very natural for me. And I'm seeing a lot more Latinos come out into the U.S. market, which I love. I think that's the thing we need to do. And obviously, Africans and people from any developing coffee country is critical that we get engaged on this part of the supply chain. So I think we need to understand the communities, the people, the trade, and we need to be students of our industry. I've been doing this for 22 years. If you ask people in the industry about Mayorga, many people don't know me. They don't know our company. Because we don't go out to the shows and try to be stars in the industry and try to win, you know, all the competitions. I've been a student of the industry. I've been a student of the communities. I've been a student of the trade for 22 years. I've had my head down, understanding it, and building a business around what I believe is the future of coffee. And building a business around creating opportunities for producers. And I tell people all the time, we grow our sales to help farmers. Our competitors and too many people in the industry say they help farmers to grow their sales. And that is a big issue. So I think we have to all take a look at ourselves and say, okay, we need to chill on the big talk. There's a lot of big talk in the industry. There's a lot of, we're going to do things. I just read an article by somebody that's, I think, pretty well respected in the quote-unquote sustainability of coffee. And it was an article all about nothing. It basically said, we need to do something. We need to do something. We need to be able to work with our competitors. It's going to be hard, but we have to do it. But absolutely nothing talking about specifically what we're going to do. And it seems very self-serving, and I think that's what's happening in our industry. What we're supposed to be doing, what we need to be doing, isn't being done. And what's being done is, let's talk about it as if we're the great white savior, but let's not do anything. Let's look good on paper, let's look good on Instagram, let's show a picture of the poor farmer, let's show a picture of me shaking his hand, let's show a picture of me putting on the sombrero and acting like him, but there's no true broad-based approach of let's all put our heads down and really understand the issue here and understand the people we're working with. I'm not saying there isn't anybody doing it, because there are good people doing great things, but we're a small, very small minority. So I think we all need to, in the industry, kind of stop this race to be the savior of the small, poor coffee farmer, because it's not working. And honestly, it's self-serving. Unless you're in there and you're invested and you're really creating a model to do that, you're not doing anything other than trying to put the spotlight on yourself. And let's talk about that. Let's talk about the model. I literally built my business to help producers. What does that mean? I've been adamant that I can't and will not have investors. Why? Two reasons. Number one, I don't want to be responsible for your money and make my decisions around your returns. Because I don't give a shit about returns. I don't give a shit about fattening my pockets or anybody else's. Number two, having investors creates massive inefficiencies on the financial side because there are expectations of returns. Whether you have a super friendly investor or whatever it is, there are expectations of financial returns which create financial inefficiencies, in my opinion. And my belief when I started was, if I'm going to really drive value, I need to create value for producers and I need to create value for consumers. And we don't have investors. We now don't have bank debt. I've had bank debt. Trust me, I built a business from zero. I started with $150,000 in debt when I started this business because of my education at Georgetown that I tried to finance on my own, but really had to take out a lot of student loans. So I didn't start with anything. So I built the business on debt. I built the business on really people believing in me, actually. A lot of people believed in me and supported me, from bag suppliers to the guys at Ambex Roasters, who actually just give me a roaster on credit and let me pay it down. A lot of people really believed in me and supported me, so I'll always be appreciative of that. But you have to build your own model to be fair and equitable and really reasonable. One thing that blows my mind is you have all these people talking about all these things that we need to do for producers. What are we going to do? What are we going to do? Yet they're running a business with expectations to throw 15% to their bottom line, 20% to their bottom line. And you don't look at yourself. You look at everybody else. We need to look at ourselves. My business, and I'm very open about this. If I see 6 to 7% net income on my P&L, I'm happy. You show that to anybody in the industry, you show that to anybody, any banker that wants to do an M&A deal, they'll laugh at you. They'll think you're a shitty business person. What they don't realize is that's a purposeful, established decision by myself, which is to drive value, you have to really look at yourself and create the value internally as well. And if you look at it, and let's say we're doing 6% and our competitors are doing 15% net, which is actually a humble return in this industry. That means I'm giving 9% back to consumers and to producers. So we have to establish that as an industry as well. Let's not talk about what can we do, and not look at ourselves. Let's look at ourselves first. Do we have a model? Do we have a business that creates value? Are we taking a little hit ourselves? And are we creating realistic expectations on returns? If we're doing that, then great. So I've built the business to be efficient. I've built the business to be lean and create value. Now the question is, and I get asked this a lot, well, what do you do for farmers? Side note, I don't fucking do give backs. I can't stand when people ask me that. What give back programs do you have? Let me summarize my opinion of give back programs. A give back program is, I made so much money off of you this year, this quarter, this month, that I have a pile of cash sitting here and I want to look good. I need good marketing. I need good PR. So I'm going to build a school. I'm going to give you books and whatever little program you develop. And I'm going to give you money for that. But I need it all over my PR. I need it all over my marketing, my Instagram. It's crazy. It's basically, I'm going to screw you over and then I'm going to give you a little nugget of cash. But I need to look good and it needs to be all about me. We don't do give backs because we don't take. So that's something very important to recognize. We run very lean operations. And I've talked about this in other podcasts too. We run very lean operations. We do everything efficiently internally. But then I go back to the understanding and engagement. We have full-time staff in Nicaragua, including an agronomist, to help our producers. Initially with Arroya back in 2013. Sorry, I'm pouring more coffee. And now with Chia very heavily and developing to beans and honey. We are heavily invested. I think last year I spent about $200,000 just in travel and engagement of with our producers in Latin America. And yeah, that sounds like it's a lot of money, but I don't market. I don't pay for ads. I pulled out of trade shows. And what I realized is any external money being spent to put the spotlight on us is a waste because it's money I could be using to engage and learn and support producers. And here's what it looks like. We sit with producers and I've been kind of known for my quote unquote interrogation of producers, but in a friendly way. I ask questions that nobody else is asking. How much do you borrow every year? When do you borrow it? Who do you borrow it from? What interest rates do you get? How do you pay it back? What happens if you have a low crop? What happens when the coffee market spikes? What happens when the coffee market drops? What happens if you need in everything? And people think it's intrusive, but actually producers appreciate it because I'm one of the few people that's come from the outside world of coffee roasting into the producing world and just wanted to really learn from them and understand their reality. That's all we do. We sit with people and understand them. And what does that lead to? Once we have that understanding, we say, okay, here's the deal. We're buyers. We are the market to the producers. We're going to sit down and we're going to write our contracts up with you. And we're going to do it 6 to 8 months before you even start to harvest. And with those contracts, we're going to go to the bank locally or one of these social lenders and we're going to say, Mayorga is buying X coffee at X price and these producers need money to to harvest it, what we're going to do is the following. We're going to do a third-party agreement where, a three-party agreement where once that producer puts that coffee in a container and it's sealed and it's time to pay it, we're paying the bank. We're going to pay the bank first monies, and the bank then has to disperse the balance to the producer. That alone, we've seen reduce interest rates from the low 20s to mid 20s. We have one group down at 7% interest rates, which is unheard of in coffee. If you think about that alone, reducing somebody's interest rate by 15% or so on their loans, I mean, I've done the math, and that's equivalent in some cases to a 20 cent premium on the coffee. That's huge. The other thing we do is we pay fair trade minimum. You know, we're paying, I mean, in Bolivia, we paid $2.80 a pound. In Honduras, we paid $2.20 a pound. In Guatemala, $2.40 a pound. Costa Rica, I mean, we're paying $4.25, I believe. For the natural, we're paying like $7. So there's definitely price premiums for premium quality as well. So I guess to summarize, what do we do and how do we address this as an industry? And I think we have to shift the mindset of the trade. I even hate the term direct trade. And we have to really evolve into an industry of relationships, an industry of partnership. You know, I think one of the big things I struggle with in our industry is that nobody talks about producers being our suppliers like you talk about a producer. Like you're talking about a supplier of any other business, right? And I always use the example of like a car manufacturer. A car manufacturer or an airplane manufacturer doesn't want their supplier to be poor and struggling, because then they're going to make a shit product. They're going to make a product that is going to fall apart or kill somebody. Why in our industry do we not see that? Why in our industry do we not see that we want our suppliers to be strong and healthy and vibrant? I mean, I'm a supplier to a lot of big companies. And a lot of the conversation from them is, we want to make sure you're healthy. We want to make sure you're solid. Some of my retail clients actually have kind of slowed down their growth with me because they realize that they're becoming a big part of our customer base. And they do it because they don't want us to be vulnerable to them. They care about us so that they want us to be healthy, really for them and for their customers. We need that mindset. And that mindset leads to understanding and really leads to opportunity. It led for us to really get into the chia side of things. We developed chia, as hopefully everybody knows by now, and as a result of the impact of the coffee rust in 2013 for our producers. There is no way we would have done that had we not had the in-depth understanding and involvement with our producers. Nobody in our industry was doing stuff like that. I was sitting on calls with like, oh, we're forming the Coffee Rust Trust and whatever they called it. And we're going to talk about what to do about the rust. And we're going to raise money. I'm like, what are you going to do with that money? There's just a lot of big talk. We went in there, got our hands dirty, planted chia, bought the chia, sold the chia. Now we're doing 4 million pounds of chia. I have producers coming to me from everywhere. Honduras, Guatemala, Peru, Argentina, everywhere in the world wanting, not in the world, but in Latin America, wanting to be part of the Mayorga Chia program. We're now getting into cacao with a lot of our farmers. Unfortunately, we've seen yields just go down in some areas, and we recognize that it's a climate impact. And some of the elevations that were efficient for coffee 15, 20 years ago are not that great for coffee now. So we're literally cutting down coffee and planting cacao. I have no shame in that. You know, a lot of people in the industry kind of, and I hear it, people talk about me negatively, say, well, Mayorga doesn't care about coffee. They just want to make money selling products. You know, they don't care what it is. The truth is, man, I care more about people than anything. And I think we all should. I don't care how great you are at anything. If you don't care about people first, then you have issues. And I care more about people than coffee. Yeah, that's true. But I care about them to the point where I want them to be successful, and I still want to do the same thing I've done with coffee for them. We're getting to the cacao trade for that reason. We're doing chia for that reason. We're doing beans. We're doing black beans. We're doing pinto beans for that reason. We want to help our communities in Latin America, our people in Latin America, have a fair shot at being relevant in the trade. And if they can't be the best at coffee, we'll help them be the best at cacao. And if they can't be the best at cacao, we're going to help them sell their beans while they become better at cacao, whatever it might be. Yeah, coffee will always be the focus, but people will always come first. And I would love to see the industry shift into that mindset, shift into caring about people, caring about communities, caring about humanity. And I really believe if we all started to, we would see a material impact towards producers. We wouldn't have this conversation about the market. We would let the commercial market just do its thing. Let the massive buyers buy from the massive producers. And let's create the second markets of quality, sustainability, specialty coffee. But let's really understand things on a human side. Let's understand things also on an economic side. Let's not kid ourselves that paying an extra 50 cents a pound fixes anything. I've seen situations where roasters pay, you know, $3.50 a pound, and they'll promote it, and they'll talk about how they paid $3.50 a pound. But I know enough in the industry that I know the exact supply chain they bought into. They paid a trader $3.50 a pound, and I've known for a fact that the producer got maybe $1.10, $1.30. Why? Because the trader marked it up, the trader had to pay the exporter, whatever it is. And then even on some back-end stuff where you might pay the exporter $3.50 a pound, but you don't hear the fact that the exporter actually deducts out of that $3.50 a pound to the producer milling costs and all kinds of other costs that are excessive. So anyway, understanding. And it's not easy, guys. This is a 300-year-old problem. None of us are going to fix it on our own. We're not going to be the best at sustainability by ourselves. Let's stop that. Let's stop that. Look at me. Look at me. I'm the sustainablest. I mean, one of the funniest terms I hear is ethical coffee. Like, let's set that bar as the standard. Let's all be ethical. Let's all be considerate. Let's all be aware, and let's be human. And once we bring humanity into the trade, we then are going to create a secondary market that is going to be more focused on quality and sustainability. And we're not going to give a shit about what happens in the seed market. And that's my rant about this. I'm sure people have opinions. I'd love to hear them. Email me, martin@mayorgaorganics.com. That's martin@mayorgaorganics.com. You can check out our Instagram, which is @mayorgaorganics, and our website, which is mayorgaorganics.com. Anyway, hopefully all this made sense. I rant, and I don't have really a focused agenda in front of me to have discussed based on, but those are my thoughts right now on the current situation of the coffee market and the coffee industry. And I don't know. I hope it was valuable, and I hope it made sense to everybody, and I appreciate you listening. Till next time.